Good morning, everybody. Thank you for your wonderful, warm welcome. It's great to be back here after 11 years. And of course, I wore my pride shirt. And I had an opportunity to be at the Grand Haven Pride yesterday, and what a wonderful celebration, and what beautiful weather, and being by the water. It was just, it was terrific. And I too see LGBT Pride as a way to celebrate who we are, a safe place where we can be our authentic selves, and to look at all the different things that we've accomplished. While at the same time, given the job that I do as an attorney with the ACLU of Michigan for our LGBTQ project, I also like to reflect on what are the challenges that we're facing and what are things that we can proactively do in order to meet those challenges. And I'm also a half glass full kind of guy. So I think the first thing when we're celebrating Pride is to talk about all the accomplishments that we've made in the past 11 years since I was last here. Well, of course, you know, the first accomplishment was the historic Supreme Court decision regarding marriage equality back in 2015, saying that same-sex couples should have of the fundamental constitutional right to marry and the benefits and protections associated with marriage. And also, since 2015, we elected a governor, an attorney general, and a secretary of state, all who support LGBTQ rights. And a lot of that resulted in progress made towards LGBTQ equality in our state. Probably the most important, the most singular, most important thing that happened in our state was in 2023 that the legislature passed and Governor Whitmer signed into law comprehensive civil rights protections for LGBTQ people, adding the explicit categories of sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. So Michigan prohibits, yes, worth applauding. Michigan prohibits discrimination against LGBTQ people, not only in employment, but housing, in education, and this large term that's called public accommodation, which includes any type of program that's open to the public. And Michigan became the 23rd state out of 50 states to have this kind of civil rights protections. Not only took 46 years to get it through, but it finally did happen, and it makes a significant difference in our state. We've also seen in the past 10 years, laws passed that recognize LGBTQ families, including partners who've been raising their partners' children. They can be recognized as legal parents under the law. We've seen laws passed that would ban the practice of conversion therapy, which is a discredited practice that purports to change a person's sexual orientation or their gender identity, and has been found to be very harmful to individuals. We passed a law that recognized crimes of violence motivated by hate against LGBTQ people as hate crimes as such. In addition, policy-wise, we've been able to make obtaining accurate identity documents for transgender people more accessible. So for instance, Secretary of State Benson adopted a policy allowing transgender people to change the gender marker on their driver's license by self-attesting as to their gender, as opposed to having to jump through a myriad of sometimes impossible hoops that other administrations had required. We allow transgender people to correct their birth certificate to accurately reflect their gender identity, including the option of being identified as non-binary. We have been able to modify our name change law to streamline the process for people to obtain legal name changes to make their name reflective of their actual gender identity and gender expression. And then in terms of access to gender-affirming health care, we've made some great strides with our Michigan Medicaid program that requires that Michigan insurance companies that that serve as Medicaid providers for the state of Michigan, that they have to actually follow what the experts say regarding transgender health. They can't just subjectively decide that something is not medically necessary and they're not willing to cover it. Also, we've made clear that health insurance companies cannot discriminate against LGBTQ people, and in particular, transgender people, in terms of what kinds of health care they're going to cover. So those are some really, really significant gains that we have made towards LGBTQ civil rights in our state. And I remember when I first started working, when we first started the LGBTQ plus project at the ACLU of Michigan, that Michigan was known as a lost state. Basically, all the different national groups would say, well, look at your legislature, look at your governor, look at your courts. You're not going to be able to accomplish the things that you want. And today, it's so much different. Michigan is looked upon as the leader on some of these things. And we've made great strides, not just due to the work of legislators or the ACLU or advocates of different organizations, but the work of you. People speaking up and speaking out and advocating for your elected officials and policymakers to do the right thing. And it really has made a significant difference. Well, we know that anytime a civil rights movement makes progress, they also experience a pushback. And I think that's what we're seeing in terms of challenges for LGBTQ equality in our state today. There was an article in the New York Times in 2023 talking about a meeting between some groups that opposed marriage equality and opposed LGBTQ rights in general. And these groups, they got together and they said, okay, we lost on marriage equality, but how do we stay relevant? Could we pick a subset of the LGBTQ community that we could target? We could pick a group that maybe the general population doesn't know that much about them. They might not understand, you know, what they're all about. And then could we create our own narrative about this group of people? And will it help us continue raising money? Will it help us continue to have a political base? And so they purposely chose to target the transgender community, banking on the idea that still, although, you know, we've changed hearts and minds and knowledge about what it means to be gay and lesbian and families and relationships, that still in society didn't quite understand what it means to be transgender, what it means to live with a diagnosed condition, gender dysphoria. And so that's what they did. And they started creating a narrative that wasn't based on truth or actual information or actual facts or actual verifiable studies. And in the past decade, probably even less than decade, they have been successful in many ways. To this day, 25 states have laws that ban medically necessary gender-affirming health care for transgender youth. And let me clear up one falsehood that seems to be taken as gospel by even mainstream media. Transgender youth do not get surgery. When we're talking about gender-affirming care for transgender youth, we're talking about hormone therapy. So 25 states that have this ban, and 27 states that have a ban on transgender girls being able to play on the girls' sports teams in high school interscholastic sports. And we've seen a 500% increase in state legislatures introducing anti-trans legislation. Just this last year, 900 different bills were introduced in various state legislatures that would take away rights from transgender people. And the same thing is true in the state of Michigan. We saw bills introduced that would ban gender-affirming care, that would deny trans girls the ability to play sports, and would strip civil rights protections for transgender people from our state civil rights law. In addition to that, we've seen the Trump administration issue almost a dozen executive orders targeting the transgender community. Let me throw out a small fact to you right now. Transgender people make up probably less than 1% of the actual population. But you can imagine all the bills and a dozen executive orders targeting the transgender community, targeting, prohibiting them from being able to serve in the military, from being able to enlist in the military, prohibiting them from being able to access passports that accurately reflect who they are, denying health care to transgender prisoners in federal prisons, denying their ability to be housed safely in prisons, outlawing providing gender-affirming care for transgender youth in hospitals and medical centers, and threatening to take away all federal funding from any medical entity that's providing this health care to transgender people, threatening to take away money from public schools that are supportive of transgender students, recognizing them by their name, their preferred pronoun, allowing them to use restrooms in accordance with their gender identity and their ability of trans girls to be able to play sports. Those are the executive orders. Now, one thing that's important to keep in mind about executive orders is executive orders aren't laws. They're policy directives from the president's office, but they can be reviewed and they can be overturned by the judiciary, by judges. And yet many of these orders were taken as gospel by different entities that chose to follow these directives. And in addition, we're also seeing a lot of lawsuits that have brought challenging the constitutionality of these laws. So for instance, regarding gender-affirming healthcare for transgender youth, there is a nationwide injunction, in other words, a court order that prohibits the Trump administration from being able to take away federal funding from these medical entities. It's in place, and yet the administration continues to be relentless at attacking medical entities in states like Michigan, where gender-affirming care is legal, by threatening, giving out subpoenas to hospitals and threatening criminal prosecution if they don't comply, requesting the names of patients and their parents if their kids have undergone gender-affirming care. This has resulted in two programs closing down their operations, University of Michigan, as well as Corwell Health Center, stopping to provide gender-affirming care. Recently, we've been seeing the administration going into federal courts in favorable areas like Texas to get a criminal subpoena against New York's hospital requesting patient records. This is how far this administration is going. And just recently, the administration issued subpoenas against three Michigan school districts alleging that they are too supportive of transgender students in the state of Michigan, despite the fact that we do have civil rights laws that say you can't discriminate against transgender students. We've seen, you know, in terms of our news programs that have augmented and studies that junk studies that say that somehow that medical gender affirming care for both transgender youth as well as adults is harmful to them. And many times, you know, mainstream media will publish these stories or give credence to these studies in support of trying to deny access to this medical care. So what we have to understand is that this kind of plan in terms of attacking the transgender community is part of a trajectory. It's part of what we saw in Project 2025, which came from the Heritage Foundation, which they said was the blueprint plan for the next Trump administration. And the plan was to attack the transgender community, to essentially render them invisible, to no longer recognize them, and then to move on to other marginalized groups, including members of the gay and lesbian community, and to eventually reverse the marriage equality decision. So this is part of that trajectory. At the same time, we're also seeing groups that are emboldened to try to prevent materials in libraries and symbols in schools that recognize LGBTQ people. So Michigan has seen a tremendous increase in efforts to either try to ban books or to move books that feature LGBTQ characters and situations to other places in libraries that make them less accessible to people who would be interested in reading those books. The law is very clear about the constitutionality of those bans. You can't ban books just because you don't like the subject matter in them. But we're seeing many creative ways that are being done by different library boards and proponents of these book bans to try to prevent the accessibility of these materials. In addition, our United States Supreme Court has after the marriage equality decision and after after this historic decision where they said that employment discrimination against LGBTQ people is sex discrimination in violation of our federal civil rights laws, they've issued a number of bad decisions that have been harmful to the cause of LGBTQ rights. So for instance, several years ago, they issued a decision in a case called 303 Creatives that said that a web designer of wedding websites did not have to serve same-sex couples. Even though that might be a violation of Colorado's civil rights law, she did not have to do so because of her religious beliefs. And we've also seen the Supreme Court say that an adoption placement agency, a faith-based adoption placement agency, that they are entitled to receive government funding even if they're violating that government's prohibition on non-discrimination against on the basis of sexual orientation. So a Philadelphia agency, adoption agency, was able to get funding even though they refused to work with LGBTQ families with regarding placement. Our Supreme Court also issued a decision that said that parents can opt their children out of any part of a lesson plan in a public school if they believe that exposure to that lesson plan or those materials would interfere with their ability to instill their own religious principles. So this case was called Makmu. It came out last year, and it involved a group of parents who wanted to opt their kids out of a part of a curriculum that featured a story that had LGBTQ characters in it. And we also saw last year that the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of states that banned gender-affirming care for transgender youth. In other words, saying that the government knows better than what parents might know or decide in collaboration with physicians as to what's the best medical care for their children. We can expect a decision any day now from the United States Supreme Court regarding the constitutionality of states to ban transgender girls' ability to play sports in accordance with their gender identity. And through a series of shadow docket decisions, that's where the Supreme Court takes up an emergency appeal, and without issuing a written opinion and without signing that opinion, they can reverse lower court's decisions. And so the Supreme Court has reversed a decision regarding the military ban. In other words, they reversed the injunction preventing this administration from denying transgender people the ability to be able to serve in the military. And then they also reversed a decision preventing the Trump administration from denying accurate passports to transgender individuals. So you can see we have a lot of challenges ahead of us and a lot of challenges facing our transgender family members. And sometimes we hear in political circles that, you know, it's okay to talk about gay and lesbian stuff. It's okay to be vocal about the LG rights, but let's not talk about that transgender stuff. It's viewed as too woke. It's why maybe we lost the election in 2024, although no studies really demonstrate that. And then sometimes, I'm sad to say, I hear sometimes from members of our own LGBTQ community, why do we have to be concerned about these trans issues? This has nothing to do about who you love or who you're attracted to. This is about how you identify. And if we didn't have to deal with that issue, we would be fine. And I think they're sadly mistaken on all of the above. When we look at the progress that we've made in the LGBTQ rights movement, a lot of that progress was started or was implemented by the trans community. We have mentioned about the Stonewall Rebellion in 1969. That wasn't a bunch of muscly white gay men who stood up. They were trans women of color who decided they had had enough with law enforcement harassing them in establishments for LGBT people. When we look in terms of how we got some of our civil rights with regarding protections against employment discrimination, that came from the transgender community. Amy Stevens was the ACLU's client on the case involving employment discrimination that went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And what we share in common is often what motivates that discrimination against the community as a whole is the society's belief that our community fails to conform with stereotypes, gender stereotypes, about how you're supposed to look, how you're supposed to act, who you're supposed to love. It's the same thing. And also, as I mentioned before, this is a trajectory. Opponents of LGBTQ rights have decided this is a low-hanging fruit, so to speak, with the transgender community, but they are motivated and they're ready to move on other issues that would impact the community as a whole. So I think it's very important that we do speak up and we do speak out, that our voices are heard. I think to any civil rights movement, anytime you face opposition, the greatest challenge is silence and the unwillingness to do something. And this year, we have the greatest opportunity to do something in this November's election. We're nonpartisan. I'm not telling you who to vote for, but I am telling you it's important that your voice is heard and that we have an understanding that elections can make a difference. That's certainly true at the national level, what we see, what we've gotten with our United States Supreme Court. It's certainly true, can be true at the state level, the progress that we've been able to make towards LGBTQ rights as a result of the choices that people made in terms of who they wanted to elect as their leaders and their choice they made to participate in our elections and to have their voice heard. So, you know, in closing, I want to emphasize that we have much to celebrate about, and we need, especially now, to continue creating safe and supportive places for members of our community and for our allied community where we can be together and we can be our authentic selves. And at the same time, if we really are capturing the true essence of pride, we talk about, you know, what was the genesis of that pride. It was people back in at the Stonewall Bar in 1969 who decided that they had had enough of being marginalized. They had enough of being harassed and being prevented from finding safe spaces where they could be themselves, and they decided to take action. And we always need to keep that in mind, and we need to ask ourselves, what am I doing to make a difference? What can I do to make a difference? You know, I feel very strongly, this is outside of working for the ACLU or being, you know, an attorney involved in the area of social justice, I feel very strongly personally as a member of the human race. I think often we know what is right, and often we know what is wrong. And what are we going to do about it when we know that something is wrong? So again, I want to wish everybody a happy and reflective Pride. And I hope all of you feel, in addition to celebratory, motivated to make whatever own difference you're able to make. Thank you very much.